The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! Wide on the siren! So well taken. Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks!
Oh, gee whiz.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big man takes the mark, it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh?
Pickett lines up.
Everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy. Started with him. Yep. Dusty's dangerous. He's swarming.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
Woo! We're in a grand final.
We're in our third grand final in 4 years, Andy.
Oh, it's becoming routine and dull, isn't it?
Well, I wanted to ask, so it's, I think this year is anything but routine, and certainly not dull. If not, it hasn't been the most joyous year, but I really enjoyed, you know, friend of the show Conrad Marshall's article about what it was like in Melbourne this week. You know, normally the city's abuzz with grand final fever, public holiday on Friday. How does it feel for you?
Well, it feels different. I've been away from Melbourne for some grand final, not the grand final itself, but the lead up. So, yeah, it, like, you know, this game has a soul, and this game's soul is on in the suburbs of the inner of Richmond and Collingwood and Carlton and Fitzroy. And, yeah, it's sad that it's not there, but if it's just away for 1 year, that's okay. But, we can all take a break for 1 year, and hopefully it'll come back next year. But it does make you pause and reflect about what's really important.
Yeah, there's a disconnect, I think, with the club certainly from their Melbourne fans. You know, hopefully they get to do an open training for the Queensland fans. But yeah, it's not the same.
No, it's not. But I think Peggy has been a real tower of strength of this. And, you know, her staying in Melbourne when the other club presidents got on a plane so that they can not give good advice to their coaches close up. Peggy's mature enough to know that her job is to be the stabilising force. And now, also, I heard actually, I think it was Silvani who said this today, there's two things that you have, the assets are important as a football club, and they're the players and they're the supporters. And yeah, she's closer to the supporters as a player. You know, she never got a kick in an AFL game, but that doesn't matter. But she stayed where the heart of the club is, and the heart of the club is the supporters. So I just have enormous respect. My respect for her, which is always pretty high as a 2-time premiership winning president, has gone up even more.
Yeah, and look, it's been a difficult year for everyone, and you know, it's under, you know, it's hard to imagine where we are compared to what we expected, you know. The idea that I find it almost overwhelming, the idea that, you know, that we might get to unveil 2 premiership flags in front of some people.
Oh, yeah, good
at
point.
MCG next year. Like, I think it was Ando on Twitter suggested that idea. But yeah, that's a pretty strange but kind of wonderful idea. But you know, for all that is odd and unique about this year, the strength of the playing group and how they've, you know, maintained focus through often self-imposed distractions that, yeah, you still wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
No, and like it's, you know, like it's obviously a tough time and mentally tough, and it's sort of, you know, I can be a cynic sometimes about mindfulness and some of the other things that people talk about when, you know, I think at the end of the day, best players and best game playing generally wins in AFL football. But it shows it's real, right? That, you know, when you're challenged, when you have to change environments, when your goalposts move, and who has adapted best to the circumstances? Well, two teams that have had the longest period of success over the last decade. You know, Geelong's obviously hasn't been so good at finals, but they've been the best club over a long period of time at maintaining success. And, you know, the recent most successful club, like it's teams that are resilient and can adapt to different situations.
Yeah, they're mature. You know, Geelong's played some of the oldest teams the AFL, VFL's ever seen.
I think it's the oldest.
Yeah, we're certainly playing the oldest team we have in recent memory.
My thought was when I started to sit down and preview this game was it is a bit of Dad's Army versus Dad's Army.
Yeah. They've got half the team 29 or over. Like,
the average games played is 163 games. Yeah. They have two players with less than 50 games. We at least have four, including one actually genuinely young player in Noah Bolter. This is football has changed because it's well paid and sports medicine has got better. You know, there's not like all the contending teams were pretty old. Port was not much different. This is modern football, but these are two old, well paid veteran teams.
Yeah, we're slight favourites with the bookmakers. Although some of the statistical models have Geelong as firm favourites on the back of their, I think particularly their performance over the last couple of weeks. But how do you feel about that?
I'm being very careful about what I say here so that we don't get complaints about me being over-optimistic. So there's definitely, if you sort of look at Geelong's season, like the last few weeks have been good, but you probably need to dismiss the Pies game as they sort of got the shadow of the Pies team having overcome their one defining win. And then, yes, they beat the Lions. And, no, they're good against Port, but they beat the Lions, but it's still one game. Look, if you go through the season, they went through a couple of weeks mid-year where they absolutely flogged a couple of teams, and you know, including sort of 10 goal wins against St Kilda.
Port Adelaide.
Yeah, and they beat the Lions by 30 points, sorry, in the SCG. So, you know, they've had some big wins. But if you're going to do the relative form thing, I can't get past the last time we played.
That was quite recent.
Yes. It happened on September the 11th.
Mm. Yes. And we did have, and we lost Ivan Soldo, RIP,
yep.
And Tom Lynch during the game.
Yep. Admittedly, both happened, like, because we blitzed them early. They only scored one goal in the first half. But, you know, Soldo sort of was, halfway through the second. But it was still, you know,
Lynch,
so yes.
Yeah, Lynch was in the third. Yeah, and both teams were missing players. I mean, Ablett, Selwood, I think Gary Rowan was it?
Yeah, Rowan wasn't playing.
That Grimes was equal best on ground on the coach's votes just because he was playing on a on a first gamer, and just didn't, that the model of the Cats forward line is just much less threatening without Gary Rowan. Yeah, but we really, like this, a lot of the previews have focused on, you know, that this is the fastest team versus the slowest team in terms of how they move the ball. Geelong are extremely deliberate in controlling the football, denying the other team possession and moving it up the ground, getting it to Hawkins, who doesn't get outmarked. And so, you know, they're forcing a contest in at defensive 50 and being able to keep it in there versus our style of football where, you know, where we often like it when teams are relatively slow if it gives us the chance to set up our defensive structure. So, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating contest.
Yeah, and the thing is, both coaches are, like, we have traditionally thought of Dimmer as quite a static coach, but, you know, we have multiple times changed our game plan for the opponent. And, you know, there's going to be no secrets between these two teams. They've played each other. So, you know, there will be wrinkles, and there might be some surprises. But, like, the bottom line is in every meaningful game we've played over the last 3 years, our system has broken down theirs. Now, that doesn't mean it'll always happen. And by meaningful, I'm leaving out the flogging in 2019 when we were battling under strength.
When we were half strength. Yeah. Yes, but we said similar things before the Brisbane game as well, with a similar recent, well, actually a lengthy track record of success. So, yeah, it's certainly, as we showed in the qualifying final versus them in 2017, you know, history isn't determinative. It doesn't mean that that's always going to be the case, but it does, it shows that we can succeed against them.
Yes. And again, like, I don't want to appear overconfident, but Brisbane had and I know they just got smoked last week, but Brisbane statistically had a superb midfield. Geelong does not.
No, but they overwhelmed Brisbane in midfield.
Yes, it's true.
They dominated them in contested possessions, despite Brisbane having the top two contested position winners on the ground, and the Cats, you know, their leading contested ball winner was Sam Simpson, who's got to be one of the more anonymous players on a good team playing in finals. But
we're doing the same thing. We're on this weird finals tear where our biggest weakness has now become one of our strengths.
Yeah, but you know, there's a difference between, you know, Shane Ed. You know, we bought in former All-Australian Shane Edwards. We bought in our current best and fairest winner, Dion Prestia. Like, it's. I think it's easier to work out how we've suddenly got much better at the contest. But the delicate Geelong equation of can they win enough of the ball in midfield such that they can play Dangerfield forward more? That equation's been working out pretty well for them the last couple of weeks.
Yes. And look, I mean, well, firstly, on the issue of, like, so it's only two games where we've suddenly been really good in the centre square. But as you say, there's actually, like, there's a good reason behind it. So this is a good case. It should be able to continue. And look, you know, Nick, I can't deny I'm really enjoying watching Richmond games where we don't start with the ball on the half back line after every centre square bounce, you know, because it was just becoming automatic. We'd lose 70-80% of the centre square bounces, and it's not everything in life. But you know, a hat kick forward.
Yeah.
yeah, hat kick forward. It was pretty helpful against Port in the last quarter, if you watch the tape. You know, gets the ball getting the going the right game, right way, particularly when you're playing a territory battle, which this game may well be. So yeah, it does help. Like on the negative side, like let's be honest, Nick, Dangerfield has never played a good, meaningful game against us.
No. No,
very good player.
He's an extremely good player, and I think certainly us as supporters, I think there's a risk of not taking Geelong as seriously as we should because of that.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking. I was just thinking, like, surely he can't be crap forever against us.
No, because it doesn't feel like we've somehow got an overwhelming matchup for him. It's just, you know, our team defence and the pressure we get on the ball, you know, his disposal against us has often been pretty shaky. And he hasn't had the impact that we he's clearly capable of.
I think Cochin really likes going hard against him too, but you know, I don't think, as you say, it's not an individual matchup, but like my defining image of Dangerfield is him being run down from behind by someone like Lambert or George Castagna and kicking the ball out of bounds. Like that is what I think of when I think about the guy who's a pretty good case has been the second best player in the AFL after Dusty over the last 3 or 4 years. So there's a really good case. Is that sustainable? I don't know.
I mean, my other lasting memory is of him flying through the air just before half time. That's another story. So I think the trio of Duncan, Cam Guthrie, and Manigola, they are really key in this game because Selwood is there, but not himself and at previous level. But those guys have been really productive. Midfielders, and they've got big bodies, and that is going to be a problem we are going to have to deal with, is that depth of talent. And what struck me watching the Geelong game last week was how well they were playing as a team together, and you know, never really felt like the Lions were particularly in the game. But yeah, as always, midfield battle is going to be huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So Manigault's a gun. Guthrie, I think, slightly overrated because he's great at fantasy football. I don't think his positions quite add up to as much. He's top 10 in the AFL on a lot of key metrics. Well, not key metrics, but, you know, basic metrics. I don't think it adds up to quite as much as what people think it does. But certainly looks good on the stat sheet. And look, he's had some big games in the finals. His game against Collingwood was very good, for instance. I still think we can beat them in the midfield. This midfield can like they're good, but they're just like they're not that good.
They're not invincible.
They've got one gun, which is Dangerfield, which you know that you can only play that card once, just like us and Dusty. Beyond that, you've got a few sort of honest tries, and you know Selwood doesn't worry me at all at this stage of his career, and maybe I could pay for that because he was quite good against Brisbane. But yeah, I don't think that they have a definitive advantage in the midfield, and I think you know it may be a game where the midfield decides it, but I think they're very, very even. But Nick, I did want to, the thing that probably, so they're really on the advanced metrics, the two players that are genuinely absolutely star elite are Danger and Hawkins. And Hawkins is by far the best key forward in the AFL this year. So he does worry me.
Yeah, absolutely. He's first in marks inside 50, goals and score involvements. Like it's a pretty holy trinity as a key forward. And he was dominant as a forward half ruckman against Brisbane, who played two specialist ruckman. So yeah, he's extremely confident in the way he's going about his football at the moment. He's going to be a problem.
And the second, Rowan's been averaging over a goal a game, you know, and so Rowan's always as good as his last game because he's so inconsistent. His last game was good, so everyone remembers that. He's a star again, but, you know, let's not. He does regularly go missing for three games in a row in the regular season.
Well, he does, and he's got a really high variance between when they win and when they lose. Like, obviously, getting more opportunity helps, but he gets 50% more ball and 50% more goals in wins versus losses.
Huh, nice stat. And believe it or not, Staley's averaging a goal a game.
Yeah. Oh, Stanley. Yeah, he's and
Stanley. Sorry. Yeah.
15 disposals a game in his last two games. Like he's playing really confident football. At the moment,
I'm going to talk about the rucks at obsessive length in a second, right. but before we get to that,
I wanted to talk about their defense because that I found that quite interesting.
But just before we do, do you think we're presuming Bolter gets Tomahawk after his good job in September?
Yep.
Okay. Agreed. Which does leave a slight problem that down the line Dave doesn't really have a matchup.
No, he doesn't. Other than being backup ruck, or if they haven't been playing Stanley forward all that much, but if they play Stanley forward, it's the obvious matchup.
So it's hard to play Stanley forward with this team, though.
Yes, yeah, with Ablett and Rowan and Dangerfield, it's hard to fit him in.
Also, they don't, unless they move big class into the ruck, they don't have a ruck if they're moving forward.
No, that's true. He's a real. Look, one of the things I admire about Geelong, you know, yes, they had the incredible good luck of getting Tom Hawkins, who would have been the first pick in the draft, as a third round draft pick under the old father son rule. Obviously. They got Gary Ablett for very little, also as a father-son pick. But they do also, you know, Richmond hasn't been particularly creative in its use of the Category B rookie list, other than bringing in family members of current Richmond players. But, you know, Geelong in getting Blitzars, they got O'Connor as an Irishman, they've got basketball players they've really made a commitment to try and maximise the talent from wherever they can, and I think Blitzars is a really unique player.
I agree. So do you think he'll be I've actually asked multiple people this today. We're presuming that he'll play on the wing.
Yeah, dropping, and I'm assuming it's a similar, because he's been doing that the past few weeks, as he did when we played them, but dropping back to be third man up in marking contests, because, you know, Harry Taylor, Collegesny, Lockie Henderson, you know, none of them are overwhelming one-on-one players. They're all very solid. Their listed defense that they went into the Brisbane game, the shortest player was Tom Stewart at 190 centimeters. Like they're pretty tall. And with those guys plus Blitzarves dropping back, it's very much designed that they don't concede intercept. They don't concede contested marks inside 50, and then they control the ball on the way out. But I do, of all the teams in the finals, they concede relatively the most goals to shorter players, which was in a very good article on the ABC website, and I do think there's something there that a lot of their defenders are quite athletic. Like Henry's fast, Colajasny's a good athlete, Stewart's a very good player when not being humiliated by Dusty. Buse is quite quick as well. But I do think the agility and shiftiness of guys like Rioli and Bolton, I think that's potentially a problem for them.
And has been in the past.
And has been in the past, yes, definitely.
And, you know, also unless they bring, they sort of, and Chris Scott does pull wild cards, unless they put Biklaus back onto Lynch. Tom Lynch has beat his direct opponent quite badly in recent long games.
The third quarter was pretty of the prelim final. Lynch was a man on a mission.
That gives me some hope. But, you know, Nick, you know how some people with obsessive compulsive disorder wash their hands constantly? My OCD quirk is I analyse second rucks too much.
I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm surprised.
And I am worried, like the Biklaus and Hawkins, and they have been sort of the second rucks taking the majority of the second taps various finals.
Blitzars does around the grounds and Hawkins forward.
Yeah. They worry me. They're both quite good at it. And I'm worried about down the line Dave, because he doesn't really have a position in this game because, you know, he's sort of one role has been taken by Noah. So yeah, that does work. Like I'm not worried. Stanley, I like. He's a big lump of lad, but he's not too tall. Like he's a good athlete, but
he's a good athlete. I think there's a good chance that he jumps over Nank, particularly early on until Nank has a chance to grind his soul into oblivion.
I was about to say we know how that story ends. I'm not worried about that matchup, and I think Nank eventually does him around the ground, or at least draws even. But I am slightly worried about us losing a few key contests with inexperience down the line, Dave, who's a bit of a fish out of water because he just doesn't like pick gloves and Hawkins. Blitzards. They're just superbly good in their element once the ball hits the ground. I worry about that.
Yeah. I worry Geelong have a capacity for dominating periods of time and putting it on the scoreboard. Hawkins sometimes doesn't kick very well, but sometimes he does, and he's got range to 55 metres, and ditto for Dangerfield. And that if they have a period, as they inevitably will, where they're controlling the football, that there's a risk of, we work super hard for a period and don't really convert our work, they convert their chances and they get to play the game at their speed with us always having to chase the game. And it sounds like I'm more worried than you are.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, in fairness, Nick, you say that every time we play a good team. It's in the context. I think the context of this is like extremely tight in the betting. You know, this is a 50-50 game. So, like, all I'm arguing is that we might have a 60-65% chance of winning, and that's, you know, that's still dangerously close to it. There's a 35% chance that our hearts will be broken. Just on a slightly humorous side, Nick, I am looking forward to seeing George's first shot at goal in the grand final, where he can get the streak going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
God bless.
Now, I did want to speak to you about the Norm Smith, Nick. So I think wrapping up, I am officially, I'm terrified, nervous. The second ruck's going to cost us the game. Asprey's going to be floundering without a position. It's all going to go to hell. We'll never have happiness again. But unofficially, I'm moderately confident.
Yeah. Look, their forward line, as we'll face it, is much more dangerous than the one that we overwhelmed last time.
Yep.
Like Hawker.
And the inside 50s were 40 to 42 last time, so yep. We weren't overwhelming.
No. Hawkins were able to nullify because Grimes could relentlessly play off his man. Gary Rowan may well be the matchup. Dangerfield could well be spend a lot more time forward. Kieran Myers gave us a lot of trouble in the final last year when he wasn't staging. And I thought Parfitt was genuinely impressive as well. Assuming he's not too distracted by all the trade rumours going around. So yeah, that's a good forward line. There's a lot of class and sort of X factor in that forward line. So yeah, it's a very solid defence. A deep midfield. If it wasn't Geelong, guys like Zach Tui's in his first grand final, Dangerfield's in his first grand final, they'd be a little bit more heartwarming a story than they are. Although I find absolutely nothing heartwarming about the story of Gary Ablett takes lots and lots of money to go to a different club and then comes back to that club in the waning years of his career for one last shot at glory.
Having seemingly ruined the culture at the club that paid him a lot of money.
Yeah, and done nothing to lead the young club for whom he was exceptionally well remunerated.
And perhaps liked a few posts on social media that were quite homophobic.
And Chris Scott being happy would just be intolerable.
True. Although I am mellowing on Chris Scott slightly, I must admit. If Dangerfield doesn't win this, I think he's the best player of the last decade since 2010 who hasn't won a grand final.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he becomes the Nathan Buckley of his generation.
It's exactly what I was going to say. I think you need to go back to Buckley to find a better player. He never won a grand final. Here's hoping we can keep the streak going. Now, Nick, Norm Smith betting.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, we're only going to talk about Richmond players because you've been a Geelong player to win the Norm Smith. You're a bad person and you have no business listening to this podcast.
Although, notably, that I couldn't find that a Geelong fan podcast.
Fair enough. Do you reckon? So, firstly...
Look, I think that's worth calling out that, you can barely move for Richmond-related podcasts these days, but... You know, they're in the midst of a really good era and none of their fans can be bothered.
That's true. I think there's at least three as well as several that have sort of gone by the wayside. Yeah, no, it's a fair point. Well, I don't know. It's just like we know Richmond supporters are crazy passionate and committed and we know Geelong supporters sort of aren't, but, you know.
Apologies if there is one. And I just wasn't.
Well, there are. Look, in the last prelim final, the sort of the one-fifth of this crowd that were Geelong supporters were noisy. But the point is, there just aren't many of them. Like, you know, we've been in the prelim finals, Nick. We know what the noise is like. And, there was just a lot more crazy, insane Richmond supporters. Right, Nick. I wouldn't have even brought it up because I don't think it's a competition. But, you know, they'll be annoying and chirpy if they win. But, you know, that's football. So can I just run through the odds a bit briefly? So, Dusty, we're just using what we don't endorse gambling. This is only interesting for probability purposes. So we're not going to mention what we are, what site we're on. But, you know, it's one of the big ones. Dusty's at 440. Considering Richmond's playing 180 and Dustin Martin is BOG in the majority of our final winners, that's actually not a terrible bet. I wouldn't bet it, but...
No. So Dangerfield's the second bet. I was very amused by who's equal third in the betting.
Yes. There's so much going on. But so, like that's awfully... Third is Bashahuli at 13 to 1, so obviously it's a bit of a gap. But and look, okay, it might not be completely irrational because the voters, if it's close, Bashes in with a good shot from the sympathy vote. But let's be honest, like I don't think Basher got a Brownlow vote this year. And I know he missed a lot of the year, but that is a terrible bet.
Yeah, it's sentiment on the fact that he's come second twice. And quite close, particularly in 2017.
And then Dion Prestia, I think it's also a terrible idea to bet on. He might be a solid, like he's been playing better, but he's not the kind of eye catching player that will get the judges' attention. Kotchin at 15 to 1 is a better bet than Prestia, but I still, I don't think. You just have to go through his season. He so rarely gets umpires' votes. Shea Bolton at 17 to 1 is not a terrible bet.
No, it isn't. He's a very flashy player who's, played well in big games before.
Had 3 votes last time we played them.
Yeah. What would you think about Mr. Football Tom Lynch winning the Norm Smith?
Well, I don't think it's a bad bet because, oh my God, it'd be satisfying to collect. So at the moment, I wouldn't either of them, but Shea I like more. Since Shedder's come back, he's playing more as a forward. I think it's hard for him to get the 3 votes like he did against Geelong. I think if all the ones we mentioned thus far, I'd take Mr. Football because it'd be a lot of fun. Cam Lambert, I wouldn't touch at 21 because, yes, he kicked 2 goals, but he hasn't been that good. Shedder's a good bet at 21. Jack is not. He's at 26, past his prime. Dylan Grimes at 51, because they're not going to get it. Like, Dylan might shut down Dangerfield if he stays forward, but they're not going to give him the thing. Jack Graham, no chance. George Castagna might be fine at 50 to 1. Jaden Short at 51, that's a chance. But Nick, Noah Bolter at 50 to 1, if he's playing a Tomahawk, is a chance.
That'd be great. I would love that. I hadn't even thought of that possibility. That is a great idea. The Mars Volta Appreciation Society guys would be going nuts.
But my favourite, two at 67 to 1, which is both Vlossy and Nank.
Ooh. Ooh, because Nank would have been a red hot go for the frame from the Port game.
Yeah, he's unlikely to repeat the performance, but he's 67 to 1, and he was BOG on last week's, especially the voters having just watched the last quarter. Yeah, so anyway. Is anyone else you wanted to mention?
No, I thought Sheds was particularly good value, and yeah, I would appreciate the theatre of Tom Lynch winning. Speaking of Nank, he resigned for 3 years.
Yep. About what we expect. I think the moment Soldo went down, that was sort of the end of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think 3 years is a nice compromise of him wanting a bit more security. And with the uncertainty of, Soldo coming back from his injury, what's Callum Coleman-Jones's future? I think it just made too much sense all round.
Yeah, you suspect, it'd be fascinating to be on the inside of this to know whether he got a premium at all, what was on the table before the Soldo injury, whether he got a premium. Like, you presume that they didn't sort of panic after the great Port game and then offer him a lot more. You think it was probably just in the works. But, yeah, it'd be fascinating to know what happened, how these things work in practice. But, it, as you said, make far too much sense. And the one that was far more sort of interesting to me, just from an analytical perspective, was we were prepared to give RCT 2 years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the word was his scratch match form was very good at the end of the year. But it's a
did he kick a nice goal from the goal square, from the centre square again?
Possibly so. I mean, he's certainly athletic enough to do so. But yeah, in an era of uncertainty on list size and salary cap, yeah, it's a definite vote of confidence. He was an emergency eight times this year. And I think that's 10 times. 10 times. He has been emergency before his debut more often than any Richmond player in the modern era.
Yeah, interesting. And Dimmer, like the coaching staff has said, oh, yeah, we would have played him, but the things didn't go quite well. And yeah, like when they say that, yeah. You know, they would have played Ben Miller if eight players had got injured. You know, it's a little bit of a cop-out. They've still made a prioritisation decision. But, yeah, it's certainly promising. The 2 years, you can spin things all you want, but 2 years speaks for itself.
The other off-field news... sadly, Craig McRae's off to Hawthorn from his current forward line role, previously VFL coach. Yeah, I think he seems to be going just with a overwhelming sense of goodwill from everyone who's dealt with him at Richmond.
Yeah, everything I've heard is he's a cracking coach. And I loved it when he, in his farewell video with Richo, that he mentioned winning the VFL as one of his highlights. And that was sort of heartwarming.
It was a pretty great, it was a great game. You know, it would just kill me if Richmond won a grand final in those circumstances. But yeah, with the other team preparing the goals and hitting the post repeatedly in the last few minutes. But yeah, it was a great effort.
Yes, it was. Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, and look, the other sort of bit of coaching. It's not really news, but that Adam Kingsley's got a bit of buzz around the North Melbourne job, which yeah, I don't know. That's a lot of coaches to have to replace, even though we were probably looking at having to reduce the number of coaches, but yeah, and that's a lot.
Yeah, and we're going to miss Leper a lot. And, he may come back. He's going on a sabbatical, so I don't know what that means in practice. He's come back once before. But yeah, it's a lot of talent that needs to be replaced. But, hopefully we get good people in because, it's a bit of a factory now.
Oh yeah, and
production line.
Yeah, and as a young coach, why wouldn't you wanna come? But yeah, it's staying at the top. The system is geared against teams staying at the top. So yeah, it won't be an easy off season for anyone. We haven't talked about team selection at all. Is that because there's nothing to talk about?
Yeah, so I did go through the caddy for Pickett theory, which is I've heard a few, but particularly perfectly reasonable people discuss, and I understand it was a big topic of debate on the Big Footy podcast, and they analysed in depth, so I don't think we need to. But look, I just don't sort of the more I thought about it, and look, our prediction selections have been abysmal, so I think they should be taken with something considerably less than a grain of salt. Pickett was good last week. He fumbled a bit. He only had 13 touches, but like on the advanced metric, his pressure acts were really high. He did plenty of important body work. In the last few seconds, he was the one who created the contest that spoiled and sort of made a second effort.
In front of Dixon,
yeah. Look, I just don't. And also, this is a game where, like, Geelong are a possession team. We need pressure on the ball carrier. You're going to play Pickett because that's what Pickett's a pressure player these days. Mm. It doesn't make sense to me. As much as I love the idea of Josh Caddy's trash talk, if I was to drop anyone, I'd be down the line Dave, but we both know that's not going to happen.
No, look, I actually think we go in with the same emergencies we had last week. Like, I just think that the structure of the team makes, it's obvious. Like, if we need to replace a small forward because of injury, Arts would come back in. If we need to replace a defender, Oleg would come back in. If it's a midfielder, it's Caddy. And if it's a tall forward, it's Chol. So, and God forbid Nank gets injured.
God help us.
God help us. I think just the structure of the team and how they're working together just makes far too much sense. Those guys have all proven they can contribute and played some really good football throughout the year. But yeah, we've got a clear best 22.
I agree. Like, it just seems so unlikely. Well, I'm excited, Nick.
I'm excited. Look, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. Previewing a grand final, having a chance for glory, like, it's a kick in the guts not being able to be there, and everything that goes with it. But we know people who will be there, and God knows, the Queensland Tiger supporters have done us proud. In a normal year, having Ash Barty present the cup would be weird. But I don't know. Somehow this year it makes sense. Like, she's been there cheering the team on, and frankly, we don't really have any.
It's sort of interesting. So I do, like, I wasn't going to bring it up, but since you do, like, obviously I love Ash Barty. Like, ideally, in an ideal world, do you give it to sort of a long time someone who's contributed to the club? Of course you do. By the way, Ash Barty doesn't really need extra recognition. She's the number one tennis player in the world and will retire incredibly rich from a sport she's very good at. And probably she'll retire one of Australia's most beloved athletes. Do you give it recognised to someone else? But, like, actually, I credit Simon Moss this. He gave me a bit of sort of who else is up there. I think Reigns is up there, but, that's not exactly someone, slightly controversial there, what happened in the end of Reigns' career. I don't think it's easy. Well, so
and he walked out on the club. Look, the...
No, that's what I meant.
Getting Joel Bowden over from Darwin was sort of the best.
No, I didn't hate that.
I liked that one.
To be honest, that would have been my preference. But look, I'm not gonna. I quite like Ash Barty, so it's not. I'm not joining the culture wars on that one.
And it's not. And everything about the season has been strange, and they've made the best of a really strange situation up in Queensland, and she's been part of that. So
yeah, whatever. The person I almost like, can the president present it?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Nick, we've gone 48 minutes for the podcast where I was worried that we wouldn't have that much to say.
Yeah. Well, it is a grand final preview, and you never know when you're going to be doing your next one, but we're getting to do this one right now. And
I never want to talk about Geelong so much again in my life.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4-3-2-1, it's a goal, right on the firing. So well taken. Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your arms.
Oh, jeez. He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, it was all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh?
Pickett lines up.
There are alarm bells going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy. Started with him.
Yep.
Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.